You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. I'm so excited to be talking with actress Brittany Bond today, an old friend from the University of Evansville. Brittany is a beautiful, sensitive performer, and since moving to New York after grad school, she has also found an incredible creative outlet in photography. I hope you enjoy the 7th episode of The Compass. So what do you do to keep yourself from going to the dark side as an artist?
Can I tell you? Well, it changes. And I think that, especially since I've moved to New York, it's kind of become a routine. Because when I moved here, things were really, I had a really hard year. Like I graduated from grad school and came out here thinking things were going to be like paved in gold.
Yeah.
Things were the opposite. And like all of a sudden you're, instead of doing what you love, you're thrown into getting a job that you hate. And I was working 3 of the jobs I hate. So I realized that I needed to find a way to love the city that I hated living in. And that's why I started finding something every day that made me laugh or that I thought no one else had seen. And then that's why I started taking photos of those things, because I didn't know what else to do to record that, because writing it down didn't seem natural, and nor did maybe taking all like the funny antidotes that you have on the subway or with the city into making it a play. It didn't make sense. So I started taking photos, and that turned into a whole other thing. So it ends up being something where I try to get out. If I am feeling especially dark and twisty, I'll want to get out into it. Like, why, if the city's like bringing me down, I'll try to get out into it and see like if there's something. Like almost like wrestle it. That's changed. It didn't used to be like I wanted to wrestle it. It used to be like, well, it's like sleep more.
Hibernate.
Yeah. That sometimes works too. But just looking up and being like, well, maybe I had to pay my rent this week and that sucks. And I didn't get that audition or that, you know, or I got rejected from this other thing or person, so let me go to the park, or let me take taking a walk actually is the cheapest way of getting out into it. I will often walk not to the closest subway stop, but to like a mile one away.
Yeah.
To see, like, that's how I got lost in Hamilton Heights 2 days ago, and it felt pretty good to like see, and like I, and then to see a part of the city I hadn't seen yet. So, in a way, is like, if I feel lost, is to get more lost in like some kind of physical way.
Then it feels at least like you're doing something and you're going somewhere instead of just sitting on the couch.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes New York is hard and there's a lot of people very close to you at all times. So I feel like sometimes the hibernating does come in handy. So it's a weird, it's a it's even like making the dark and twisty part of a balance, like really listening and being like, what do I need? Do I need to spend more time alone because I haven't felt that way? Do I need to read? Do I need to learn a song on my ukulele? Do I need to, was that no one else will ever hear? Or do I need to like go see an art exhibit? Do I need to go take a
like
walk?
Like stimulus.
Yeah. And it's been like trying to like really listen to my body and what that needs. Because that almost speaks more than what my brain needs in the city. Is like, is my body tired from all this neon and all this rejection? Or is my body like craving that actually?
That's, this city is a very physical mm-hmm. experience. That's an interesting way to think mm-hmm. about it.
And so I feel like going, and that's why like I create, like I keep a draft in my emails about places I want to go eat or places I want to go or like things I want to see or like art exhibits. I just keep a little, so I have it with me at all times. Mm. And that's like why I end up doing a lot of that stuff on my own too.
Yeah.
I don't know what that. So I feel like if I get the dark side is approaching, I end up, whether it's hibernating and growing out on my own, it is almost always being on my own though and figuring out what that answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that was super important to learn, was how to be alone in a city of, you know, billions and billions of people.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about what the photography stuff has been for you as a different way to express yourself as an artist.
It sort of ended up being that thing that multiple people were like, you take good photos, or I like, you know, they get some likes on the Facebook. Or
had you really not explored that before in New York?
I had taken classes in high school. I've used my dad's film camera since I was 16, but it was one of those things that I never thought of sharing until that weird like monster social media appeared mm-hmm. and like it kind of enabled that. And it wasn't until, I don't know if you've had the thing where somebody will tell you, like, I don't know if you had somebody who told you to do a podcast for a while, and it wasn't until like random person number 87 told you that you were like, oh, I'm gonna do it. But it was something like that where I was like posting photos on Facebook, trying to deal with living here. I hadn't seen an autumn in a long time because I came from California. And so I was posting a lot of photos of autumn because I thought it was really beautiful in the city. And my friend came to visit, and he was sleeping on our couch. He was a classmate from California, and he was talking to me. He's like, you should really do something about it, like really aggressively. And I was like, yeah, maybe, well, but I don't know. I'm here to act. I don't know what that's about. And so he's like, the next day I was at work, and he went around to a bunch of cafes in the area and asked, I don't know if I've told you the story, like,
no.
Went around and like asked them, like showed him, like showed the cafe owners some photos that I had taken. And was like, would you put this girl up in your, like, would you
display her work?
Yeah. Would you be interested? And they were all like, yeah, yeah. He got like a list, like a very small list.
That's
but, like,
amazing.
A list. And I still have the note he wrote me.
Oh, that's
a good friend. And that ended up being like the random person that got to me and said, you should. So after that, like I got like a really good camera and started kind of dusted off my dad's old film camera and started doing stuff with that. And that started generating because I was finally doing something on my own. I wasn't waiting for a call. I wasn't waiting, like, the whole creating your own work thing. Like, I thought that had to be acting. I thought that had to be a show. I thought it had to be, I didn't realize it could also be something that is in my control, that is a different medium. And that's what's funny about living here is, like, I feel like depending on who I talk to, like, they consider me an actor, some people do, but some other people consider me a photographer. And that is kind of, it's new and really exciting and then also really scary, like really daunting, because I'm like, oh, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
But it's what's kept me, it's what made me fall in love with New York, was taking photos of it and then talking to people in it. So ended up opening a whole new, because one person got to me somehow.
That's such a beautiful story that he did that for you.
I know. And he's like not on the social media at all. So it's like hard to like.
Can't give him a shout out.
I can't give him a shout out. He won't hear.
That's really sweet. That's really sweet.
Thanks, Phil Deeds.
Oh my goodness. So do you see like a direct link between like storytelling between acting and photography, or do you feel like it's completely different? Like you see it more as like just like visual art and.
Oh no, it's totally connected. Which is funny because I feel like it's those little things that you find out, like you look back and you're like, well, every character I had ever worked on, I had always found like an image for them.
Right.
I had always pulled, so I had always been attracted to that.
That was something you were already looking for.
I was already looking for that moment, and I had already owned, I had always been interested in photography, but I had never considered myself a photographer, and I had always been interested in visual art, but never considered myself a visual artist. So, but I think that storytelling, especially the way that I attack acting, is the way that I've come to realize that that's how I also attack photography. Is I'm the nuance, like the very small, like I'm interested in taking photos of like something that's almost like behind a door, or like
right.
Or like
the little details,
the little details, and those were the things like small physical behavior. And acting is what I was attracted to. So that's what's really, when you can start seeing stuff like that connect, helps influence the other.
Right, that your brain as an artist is still working mm-hmm. the same way, even if it's a completely different medium.
And it's satisfying in the same way. The first time I had a photo show, I thought it was really weird because there wasn't a thing I was going to do and the people were going to clap.
Right.
So it was a whole... So
you weren't performing.
Yeah, I wasn't. I had already performed and yeah. No one was there.
Right.
And it wasn't until I printed it and put it on a wall that someone was like, oh. But it was a whole new... And then I had to stand there while everybody looked at it. And that was a whole
that
new thing.
That is strange.
So that's different. That's completely different, is the way that you bring it into the world. Like, I have photos up in a restaurant right now. Like right now, people are eating in front of it, but like I'm not there.
Yeah.
So I have, so it's cool because in a way, like even when I think, like I just paid my rent and I know my bank account's going to be gone tomorrow. Like, mm-hmm. I know there's a small part of me that's somewhere else that people are eating in front of and maybe talking about or not, but it's there. Like, so it's a little like divided when I feel like when you act on stage, like it's all of you all at once. And like, here I am. And this is, I'm going to give you this thing and you're going to react to it. Like something I'm doing is getting reacted to and I'm not there mm-hmm. to witness it. It's a whole, that's completely different. But the idea of storytelling to me, what I'm attracted to in each of them is really similar. And I'm not terribly sure I've really, like I've connected them. But until you asked me that, I don't think I'd really like been like, they're not just connected, like they're fused together.
Like articulated that
yeah,
similarity.
That they're really close together, yeah. It's interesting.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. But I know like you've, even with photography as this other outlet, you've kind of explored it in two different ways. Or I'm sure they're extremely similar, but in my mind, two different ways of you have these artistic...
Oh, mm-hmm.
photos that you've, which, tell me the title of the project again, the main one.
The biggest one was called The Wilderness Project.
The Wilderness yeah. Project. I was forgetting the name. But then also, like, you've been making some income from, like, shooting headshots mm-hmm. and shooting weddings mm-hmm. and doing that kind of photography. Has that been different for you or not really? You think of it as one thing?
They're different, but that's, when I, describe when I'm talking to a new client and I describe my work the way that I describe work, I'm like, I'm really attracted to detail. So if I shoot your wedding, I'm gonna probably take a lot of pictures of the buttons on your dress and like the like
I have a lot of beautiful pictures of my bouquet next to paintbrushes.
Yeah, like because those are the things that are like, not gonna be there the next yeah. day. Like I can pose a lot of people. And, you know, but to me, it's more like catching the small moments. But I guess income-based photography. It's like, I guess it's a commercial. I don't know. Yeah. It's because I didn't know what to do with it yet. Like, I was like, well, I'm taking these photos and I'm putting them on Facebook, and Instagram was new and there was that. And then I did like a coffee shop show, like a little with my photos on the wall. But I was like, is there other things I can do? And then the friend was like, well, I need headshots. Can you take my headshots? And I was like, yeah. And I took a couple classes on portrait stuff.
Oh, okay.
And like portrait composition to like really nail that. And so started doing that. And then like my friend's band would be like, hey, can you take... And so it just ended up being word of mouth. And my approach never changed. Thankfully, I think because maybe my strength isn't necessarily technical, even though like I do have like a technical background somewhat. It is all linked to like, what am I just interested in humanity? And it's like, but headshots, like I've taken headshots for myself. Like I know what it's like. It's terrible. So like I try to make it not terrible.
I was going to say, being person, on the other side of it must be such an odd experience as an actor.
It's odd, but I feel like it makes it really easy because I know when I've got it for them. Like I know when I hit the shot. And I know I can direct them like an actor. And I know they probably feel really shitty.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anyone who goes into headshots being like, I feel great. Well, maybe they do. But like, I don't know. Like, it's so I can put people at ease too. Yeah. And that, but I never really thought of myself as that. So like as a leader or anything like that. But then again, headshots and stuff.
That's so one-on-one, too, which I think is kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
It's an odd, intimate little relationship you're having with people for those couple hours.
Because you're literally staring into their eyes for, like, a couple hours. So, like, a lot of just basically human emotion gets transferred. And I think that's what makes it satisfies that need that when you're on stage and you're looking at someone and you're, like, in it. And you're like really listening and relating to a person. Being a photographer and having a client or just a subject that's alive and not a landscape can also like fulfill that like human connection that I feel like if you're an artist at all, like you crave.
Yeah.
Which can be really hard to keep active, I think, sometimes. And one that like I never thought that would, if I, and sometimes I hate that I moved here because I can like see the sliding doors of my life.
Right.
But then I'm so thankful because then I'm like, well, this whole, I like forced a door open or that probably maybe never would have been opened into this world, like taking photos and just really loving doing it and it being for myself, but also at the same time, like, you're taking photos of somebody's wedding, you're taking photos of their baby, you're taking photos of them pregnant or, you know, their headshots. Like, it's a super intimate, special time that you get to be with these people, and it's ephemeral. Like, it doesn't stay there either, so.
Well, and I love, like, writing your own work. It's just, it's a very physical thing that you can do to take action when you're not in a play, when someone else isn't giving you a job. Like, it's a very concrete, you can take your camera and take an image which that you can then look at or print out and hold in your hand and be like, okay, I did this thing.
Yeah. And that's what
nobody told me I could do this. I did this.
And I didn't have to wait for anybody to tell me to do it. Like, I think that was the biggest thing is like, I got told in grad school, and this was like a slightly famous person said this, and I kind of don't remember who said it, but it was like one of those master classes you have.
Like an alum of the school or whatever.
Yeah. And they said, don't wait to be told. And I don't know why that like hit me and like echoed off my bones. Because I remember thinking, like, I'll probably never be the person to start a theater company, or I'll probably never create an app or be in a startup tech company or anything, but I will probably be the person that will join the cause and like be there for that moment. So hearing like don't wait to do something until someone's like, well, you have to pay your bill or you have to even make this choice on stage, like this moment of noticing, like the moment you really have to act on it, even if you're an introvert, or even if, because once you wait till you're really, really depressed and I've been there, is like, it's really hard to climb out of.
Yeah.
So it was so funny that, and I kind of feel bad, I don't remember who told me that, because it's something that's like always, I can like kind of like hear it, like sensed somehow, like this little motto that comes back with like, when it gets dark, like don't sit there and wait for someone to call you.
Right. I love that.
Took me a long time to figure out what that meant, though. Like, it doesn't.
Well, and who knows what context they said it in, but the fact that it definitely applies to
definitely applies.
When you're feeling like you're heading into the dark side, to do something sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Or at least knowing when you can tell it's going to be too late in a second and you're just going to get depressed and watch an entire season of Mad Men again. Like, which I've done. So,
yeah.
But that was something that stuck with me in a moment that I didn't know I was paying attention.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the Wilderness Project? And is that something you're still pursuing? Or has it kind of been put to the wayside?
I feel like it was a chapter that sort of closed and was closed well. So it started with, if I thought the first year was bad, my like third year in New York was I lost a couple jobs and had trouble getting new ones, or was unhappy in one thing or the other, and just didn't know what to do with the city.
Right.
And I was nannying and ended up forced to go to the Natural History Museum, and I had never been there, and it's kind of weird and creepy if you've never been there. It's a bizarre place. It's very particular. All of the dioramas, if you take a photo of, which I did because the elk was really cool to me, I took a photo of the elk, and as weird as it looks and unreal as it looks when you're standing there in the 3D way of looking through glass, and you can tell the backdrop's painted, and maybe one looks a little like mangy. you take a photo, it flattens it, and if you get close enough, so where you don't get reflection on the glass, like it looks real. And that, I was like, what? That is amazing.
And think of all of those in the same building.
All of those. Thank you, Teddy Roosevelt. Like, they're all... Yeah, and like, so you can go through North America, you can go through the jungle in like one floor.
Yeah.
And I just remember the kid I was with was kind of having this, he was 11, and he wanted to go for some, he was having like a weird adult moment where he arrived, and we were walking through the museum, and he goes, you know what, these don't look the same as they did when I was a kid. And I remember like feeling really bad for him. And then I was getting excited because of how real they looked, but also they're in such aggressive poses, all of them. And there was something that started connecting between something he had said about living in the city and how seeing them changed, because now he was 11 and he wasn't 6 anymore. So the magic had gone away. There was something in all of that started, I just started thinking about it. Like, what if I often feel really feral in the city? Like, I don't have a home, especially working 3 jobs at a time. There were moments where I wouldn't go home for 12 hours. So, like, where was my home in the city? Like, if I need to use the restroom, where am I going?
Mm-hmm.
If I need to kill this time, where am I going? So I just felt really nomadic and weird. And it was winter, and it was terrible. And so I just... something finally connected where I thought, like, what if these animals in this natural history museum lived in this city? Like, if I was this elk, where would I be in the city? And so I started playing around with double exposures. I went back to the museum and took just stock photographs of all of the animals, and then looked through them when I got home and was like, what does this remind me of? Like, what is this, like, tableau of these animals remind me of? Oh, these elk look just like they're just sitting in the city. or these deer look like they're waiting for the subway. And so I started with those landscapes, and then I was thinking often, like, how you've asked people for the compass. Like, I was like, who do I know in the city who's like just kind of struggling, like having like living here but like really struggling? And so I started asking them, like, if you were an animal, sorry, it sounds like a grad school exercise a little bit, like, if you were an animal, who would you be in the city? And that started an interesting conversation, and that started like a portrait section. And then I found this poem called The Wilderness by Carl Sandburg that talks about, like, there's a wolf in me who has these claws for gnawing and gashing. And it talks about all these different animals and how it feels to feel that way as a person. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he says something, I'm getting it wrong probably, but like, I have these animals in me, and I take them and I give them back. Hmm. And but they're always with me. And there was something in that that just like blew it up. Hmm. So I ended up putting them all together, and it ended up being such a sad, like, I look, and every time I look at those photos, I'm like, that's how I felt about the city, and that's how I feel living in the city half the time. So, but it's had a couple versions, and I feel like now that I've lived here for this long, I feel like I can't. But every once in a while, I'll like still see it in my head. Like, I'll see a new one or something.
But that period is kind of closed.
It's closed now, yeah.
I love it. Well, maybe you can let me post some photos or some links from that, because I'd love for people to see it. I find them so beautiful, especially as someone who's not from New York and who's from a more wilderness kind of place. Mm-hmm. I loved when you pursued that idea, and it just made me kind of feel at home, because that's, it's like combining two worlds together, which is kind of how I always feel.
I felt like an outsider, and I've lived here for 6 years and still feel like not a New Yorker.
You've lived in such very different places.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
And I don't know why, like with you in particular, I think of those places so distinctly when I think of you, and because you grew up in Las Vegas, we went to college in Indiana, but then you went to grad school in San Francisco, which I know you loved and really associated with, and then moved to New York. And they're all such distinct places. Do you ever think about, I don't know, are you really attached to New York now? Do you think about living as an artist in another city?
Every Tuesday I feel like leaving. It's hard. I think I moved here at the right time. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I moved here without a job, without an apartment, which is kind of like not really like a dream in a suitcase, but like a version of that in some weird way, because it wasn't that romantic at all. But but I think, I mean, I often look at, like, I was set up pretty well in San Francisco and decided to come out here without like terribly really thinking it through. But there's a blessing in that of like being like, well, I didn't think it through, and I came here and I did this thing. I don't think I'll be here forever, but I say that every year, and then I renew my lease every year. So I know, I definitely feel like I definitely feel like I can live somewhere else and get, because it always, where I live inspires me so much that after a while in New York is starting to feel a little, not dried up, because there's like infinite things going on all the time. Especially when I think that I'm like, goodbye to all that. Something will happen. I'm like, oh, no, I'll stay.
This couldn't happen anywhere else.
This couldn't happen anywhere else. Yeah. But I do, like, living here has taught me, like, I do crave, like, to go hiking. I do actually miss having access to nature. And that was something that I've picked up in the last couple of years, is, like, you have to get out of town. And so I feel like traveling is a big thing of not staying in the same place and feeling bogged down by it. I would move back to San Francisco in a heartbeat, I think. It's hard to live so far away from my family. That's something that's come up lately, is that it feels pretty far away. But if you had asked me when I was 12 if I would live in those four different cities, I would have laughed at you. Like, I never would have thought, like, that
what's
was
the connection.
Yeah, that doesn't make Indiana. Cities. Yeah, who goes there? But it meant each one, like, informs so much of who I am now that I'm really happy that I made all those, like, crazy decisions. To be like, well, I'm going to go to school in Indiana, and now I'm going to live in California, and now I'm going to move to New York. Like,
I think about that a lot because the country is so huge and there's so many parts that I haven't been to. And as actors, we kind of feel like we have to live in a few very select places.
Yeah.
When I'm like, there's probably 10 different towns I've never heard of that would be perfect for me, that I would love living in. Mm-hmm. But I don't even let myself think about it because I think that my options are between like New York, LA, maybe Chicago, or possibly San Francisco if you're one of the few local actors who work all the time.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those things that I'm really indecisive most of the time. So, but there always ends up being like getting into school in San Francisco. I never thought of living there, and yet I moved there and thought it was such a perfect fit that I was like, well, something led me here. And Indiana was such a change of scenery from what I grew up in that it was so helpful, like just expanding horizons. And because Vegas is like a small town, essentially. Like, it is as crazy as it seems that no one lives there. Like, it's a small little Western town. So to move somewhere to the Midwest was a whole kind of opened up a door in that regard, too. I don't think you necessarily have to live in New York. I think about it all the time about, like, what if I just moved upstate? Or what if I moved back to California? Or I now feel New York has gifted me, like, a little more of the confidence of doing something on your own or finding something that kind of, here's this big city with all these options and here's this, you know, this kind of gift in a way, or like I was able to find like the inspiration in it. And I feel like no matter where I go, I could find that now, like now that I can recognize it.
Right. And that New York is just so hard to live in. Like, it kind of makes you feel, oh, I could figure out anywhere now that I've figured out this.
Yeah. I figured out the subway and and the winters.
How to deal with all of the roadblocks that throws at you. Mm-hmm. Just saying, talking about being so far from your family, how do they understand your life as an artist? Are any of them kind of in the creative side?
I always thought
side?
Of my family as being like secret artists, because like my no one has like a very like highly creative job in my family, like as their career. But my family's always been like really crafty. Like my dad works with his hands, like he's a operating engineer, and my mom was like a mom, but like the crafty mom, like the Halloween costume mom. And my sister was always like giving, she's older than me and a lot, I mean 8 years older than me, and like giving me books to, like Shakespeare to read, and she takes photos and is a journalist and teaches a dance troupe. So there was like but it's nothing that we were ever we were always like that was cultivated in my family, but it was never anything, at least and nowhere else in my family were there artists. But I feel like my grandmother was an amazing baker. Like there was always like these skills that required like intuition and creativity in it, and no one had tried it as a career. So oddly though, you would think that they would look at me and be like, can't you be a lawyer? We don't have one of those. We probably need one. But no, like I went to like a magnet school, like a creative magnet school in high school, and my mom was like, cool, try that. I don't know if they thought that was gonna go for this long. I don't know if they were just like, she'll decide to be a teacher eventually, it'll be fine. But they're supportive. I think because they really love doing creative things. So to see both daughters like try to like pursue something more creative, they were never like, you need to have a better job, or like they're not like, please settle down and have the babies. They're not like that, which I'm so thankful for. They get very confused by me living in New York. They don't understand. They're very West Coast and very Southwestern. Yeah, they've my sister's only come to visit. My parents haven't visited ever. They don't really understand that part of it. And they don't under, my mom very lovingly said, well, can I buy you an agent? My family's not. And I was like, I don't. Right. Mom, we don't have that much money. I don't know if you can
it
buy me.
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. Even, I mean, yeah, I hope it doesn't.
I mean, it's a
anyway.
Complicated system. It's such a complicated system, and it is extremely hard to explain.
And that's the part where, like, when I'm fighting that system, and it's hard for me to talk to my family, because they're like, well, why are you sad? Or like, why are you so depressed or anxious? And I try to explain that part of it. And that's the part where, like, if you aren't here with me,
right,
kind of also in the same fight, it doesn't translate. And that creates kind of we're across the country from each other, but that creates a whole other barrier in between. That gets really, and then the last year, like, I've kind of felt the weight of, like, maybe I should shorten one of those to make it easier. But they're incredibly supportive, and the photo stuff's been a lot easier to translate because I can send them that.
Right.
Like, I can send them
a physical thing.
A physical thing, yeah, which I can, benefits me and also benefits my family, where they can actually see the thing instead of missing the show that I'm in here.
Right.
Like, I can send them this photo exhibit or this photo book I was in or I designed or whatever. They can see it. And that has helped.
Good.
Also, like, that's a different language we've learned to speak. But it's like teaching your family a language. It's like teaching, like, even though they understand it intuitively, there's a bit of, like, the day-to-day that is actually what gets me down the most. They don't.
Right. But. Can you talk a little bit about your day job or your current situation with day job?
So I started temping at a play publishing company, and I was an usher on Broadway for a while. Mm. I was a nanny for a while. and I just knew that I wasn't of the restaurant waitressing ilk, even though that I could probably make my rent in one day if I, like, really worked at a good restaurant. I just knew that wasn't me. So I fought for a long time to find a desk job that worked for me. And so I started temping at this play publishing company just because it was what was on Playbill. It worked out. And so I started archiving their contracts, which is really a crazy job if you're, like, a theater nerd at all, because you're, like, looking at Tennessee Williams misspelling his name on a contract. And that's really
like a little anthropologist.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. And, like, scanning them very gently. And, I mean, it was also super tedious and not terribly rewarding, even though I was in a creative place. But then I started talking to them more, and then had loyalty in a way that finally, once some administration things changed, they were able to finally bring me on, and they found out that I was also a photographer. So I ended up becoming a design assistant.
Mm.
And now I design the ads, and they taught me how to code. So now I make the e-plays. But then, it's just such an atmosphere to be in where, like, you get to read new plays and you get to read, like, I was retypesetting The Crucible yesterday and I found a typo and I was like, this is the weirdest.
Oh my goodness.
There's, like, a typo in this, like, American classic that I'm retypesetting, and once this gets, like, proofed, it gets printed, like, that I, you know, and there's right. a joy, there's, like, a secret joy in that. And I feel like whatever day job you have in the city, like, it needs to have, like, that little secret moment, whether it's, like, scanning Tennessee Williams' contract or, like, even if, like, if you're in a restaurant, like, and you know, you just really love talking to people and getting good stories from customers, like, I feel like you have to have that moment in your day job as an artist or you'll hate everything. And the dark side will be like inevitable. So it's like finding. So I just feel really lucky that I fought for so long to find a day job and just was kind of tireless and like, no, I know it's out there. I know I can find it.
Are they flexible with you if you do have something that you need to run out to do?
Yes and no. Like it is a 9-to-5-ish job. And but they, because of that, there's insurance and there's, you know, the vacation days and stuff. And so as long as, so like really spontaneous things, no, but that hasn't really been the case anyway. So like I shot a commercial last year and they were able to get, like I knew the week ahead of time and they're mostly all creative types too. So there is a little bit of an understanding of like, oh, you're taking a sick day.
Just don't take advantage.
Yeah, don't take advantage of it. And yes, this is like a corporate setting, so there are like rules to follow. But at the same time, like it's also like incredible just to go to work and like have discussions about Pinter or like, you know, different plays you saw and like, should we take on that playwright and publish their stuff? So it just, if it actually feels really proactive and like I'm, maybe I'm not in acting in it, but I've been able to, you know, I get to read new plays and also like see the plays that we could publish and like bring into the world. So that's been really the access there, and just having that environment to be in every day is so calming in a time where like when I, the first 4 years I lived here was so anxious. Right. So it's just been nice to have that. I'm really thankful for that job, actually.
And having that stability is so comforting.
And it allows me then to say, now that I have that, can I, you know, here's this, you know, can I branch out now that I have this, you know, within the means of the job and the time I'm allowed to have off and not like, you know, and it's also taught me a lot of things. That job has. So like I'm able to, you know, branch off and because I do have that stability to do other things now too. But it's also like you rehearse at night and then you go to work at 9 in the morning or whatever. So like,
right.
So it's
a lot.
But then also like, oh God, I was looking through a journal from high school.
Yes.
It said what's, so God, it was from like 2001 and it said something like, list your perfect day. And 17-year-old Brittany said why I was living in New York, so I had that down. But like there was other things that were like, you know, wake up and go to yoga and then, you know, you work for a couple hours and then you go to rehearsal and then you eat dinner with your friends. And I read it thinking, oh, that doesn't happen. Like, oh, that's dreamy, that's romantic, 17-year-old Brittany. But then like not like a week later I like had that day and I was like, you know what, I need to like give a high five to my past self and be like, maybe it's not all like as rosy as or like golden filtered as I thought it would
be, or as easy looks on the page.
Yeah, and maybe the dinner wasn't like a French bistro, but it was like, you know, a bagel with a friend, but like still like it was after finding that I was like, you know what, 17-year-old Brittany is really proud of like almost 30 Brittany at the time, like good job, and like you are meeting goals even if they're not that you've had for a long time.
Yeah,
and like they're still really satisfying. So
oh, I'm so glad you found that.
I should let you read it. It's really funny. That's really funny.
I haven't looked at them, but I have right here under this bed, I have, since my dad sold the house I grew up in, I had to bring a bunch of my childhood stuff here, and I have a whole big Tupperware filled with like middle school and high school journals. But I just have a feeling like someday I'm going to want to see.
You should read them out loud.
Well, either if I make something from them or not, just knowing that I have them makes me really happy.
Yeah. it should. And reading that was really scary because I didn't remember what I had written. And that's kind of the best part.
Right. Because I feel like we forget so much of what we were feeling or what we were thinking.
And what we intended in some way.
Yeah.
Because that changes and, like, gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But when you, like, look at the root of it from, you know, almost 15 years ago, like, you realize that, oh, no, I did do it. I just maybe lost sight of it in a little bit.
Or it's in a different form than I...
Or it's in a different, a slightly different form, yeah.
Yeah.
But I super suggest reading it out loud, though. Even if it's just to yourself. That's an entire... Because it's so weird to hear, like, your past self...
Yeah.
...read in your present voice.
Have you listened to Mortified? The podcast that's... It's all people reading from their, like, childhood journals and diaries. At kind of like a moth style story
I would
slam,
really
like in front of an audience.
I would probably really love that.
You should look it up.
I'll look that up.
Well, a lot of the stuff we've talked about is like these pursuits you've found are very individual. Mm-hmm. Have you found many communities here in the city that have helped you have an outlet, or is it that not really like... been a part of?
Do you mean like other photographers or other...
Other or groups of actors, theater companies or...
Yeah, I think...
Or is it more of just getting together with your friends and having like that social outlet?
No, I think it's... To me, it's been... Maybe some of these theater companies have gone defunct, but I feel like everybody's trying to answer the same question when they come here is like, what now? And how? So I feel like there's been a couple like iterations of friends coming together, and I've loved to be a part of like, you know, like finding a passion project. Like a couple years ago, a group of my friends and I like really wanted to do a Chekhov show, and so bonded together and did that. And then I feel like I can bring like other things to it. Like I can photograph your, I can be in your show and then maybe also photograph it. I've done that where I was in the show, I was also taking photos of. So I was like taking photos and
all
costume.
The scenes that you're not in.
Yeah, and then I had someone else, like I set up the camera, I had someone else take the photo for the ones I was in.
Double billing.
But I think that's been really important is like, if I'm asking the question, there must, and you're doing it with this, like if I'm asking the question, other people are asking the question and trying to figure it out. So it was trying to find people that were like-minded in that pursuit. That's really helped, like find people that we can create work together based on that.
Are there, speaking of concrete things, are there any things that you turn to when you feel yourself going to the dark side to like be the first step to try to take you out, like books or I know you love music or I've talked a lot about the city, like particular places you like to go that is kind of just immediately lift you up.
Definitely listening to music is a big thing. I started like a very tiny music blog with a friend because we just kept having conversations about it that we were like, let's just put it on a Tumblr. So like we're still having the conversation, but we're putting it out in the world, like who knows. But gosh, like seeing live music, there's something that's so similar and yet, because it's a performance and yet it's so different that it enacts that like super special like inspiration like button. Like it turns that on. Dance too is something that in the city that I've really, I started going to the ballet last year.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't realize you could find really cheap tickets, like cheaper than like Broadway tickets at like New York City Ballet. And that's something because I guess I am like really attracted to like the physical embodiment of that like lost feeling. And I feel like dance is especially like ballet, and then they do a lot of programs with modern dance incorporated too. That really gets the catharsis going.
Yeah, me too.
More so than seeing a play sometimes, is seeing like a musician do like a saxophone solo. I saw a saxophone solo last night that I was like, that blows my mind. I can't do that, and I will never be able to do that, but that is incredible and like awe-inspiring. And I think dance does the same thing to me. So I kind of try to seek – it's funny that I end up seeking not theater.
No, I feel the same way though.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, since it is different, it can kind of lift you out in a different way.
Because it like hits it at a different angle.
Yeah, and you're not thinking about it in terms of like you as an actor,
mm-hmm. or like, oh, I could play that role,
right? Or overanalyzing mm-hmm. it because that's where all your training is.
Mm-hmm. It's just like you can just experience yeah. it. Yeah, I saw Tree of Codes, which is no longer in the city, but it was this.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Oh my goodness! It was at Park Avenue Armory, so in this giant building, and it was Way McGregor's ballet company and also the Paris Ballet together interpreting a Jonathan Safran Foer novel, who I love.
Okay, I've never read his stuff.
And the set design was by an installation artist that I've had a crush on for the longest time, like art crush. And the music was by Jamie XX, who was in a band called The XX. And it was like all the things I love in one thing, which ultimately sounds like it could be really disappointing. It was one of the most beautiful things I think I've seen. Like it was just incredible. The whole Foer's book is this erasure of another novel. So he's cut out words to make a different story, and so it ends up being like this sculptural like book, like this thing,
oh my goodness,
that is really hard to read, but like has this very like very physical presence, which if you read a book, that's not really, unless it's like a Franzen book, it's huge, but like you flip through, and so there was all these cutouts and all these like beautiful colors happening, and it just was like incredible, and the narrative was not at all linear. It was completely abstract, but it was the physicality and the emotion with like this incredible like art installation happening, and then like a Marina Abramović was there, and Laurie Anderson was there because it was their gala night, and I didn't know I had bought tickets for that night, so I like almost had a heart attack.
That sounds like a perfect storm.
It was a perfect storm, and I went by myself, which was also like, I love going to museums by myself too. Mm-hmm. I know you do too.
Me too. Yeah. It's actually hard for me to go with another person.
Mm-hmm. I find that too. Have you been to the New Whitney?
No, not yet.
Mm-mm. That's got some good, like, juju. That space is so incredible.
We have a membership to MoMA right now that I got. I got Frankie and I for our first year wedding anniversary, and they have members hours. They'll open like an hour early certain exhibits for members. And so I've only done it once so far, but I just went and it was just one exhibit was open, which I didn't realize, but of course it makes most sense because they can't have staff all over the entire museum just to have 20 people wander around.
But that's often, that would make...
But it was great because I spent an entire hour slowly going through this exhibit with barely anyone else there. It was perfect. And then I tried to go upstairs like right when the museum opened to see the Yoko Ono show, and it was already like buses of schools coming in, and I was like, it was already way too crowded, so I left very quickly.
That's why I have gone to their like free night on Fridays.
It's so crowded
You can get in for free.
We should go together because I can get you in for free. But at any other, like, I know you're a huge music nut. Is there like an album you listen to? it's like your saving grace.
Gosh, yeah.
Or is it always changing?
It's always changing. You're a music buff. Because the desk job really helps this.
Yeah.
Affinity for music kind of almost go. Like I had a friend ask me once. They're like, "How much music do you listen to a day?" And I was like, "Oh, that's like 8 hours.
Eight solid hours.
That's like eight solid hours of me listening to."
It's kind of amazing.
You know what's strange is if I'm not to pick an album, there is a California radio station called KCRW that is based in Santa Monica. And he, little shout out to Jason Bentley because he gets me through my day. It's called Morning Becomes Eclectic. And he just has this, and he's like he just has this like incredible intuitive like DJing sense that I find a bunch of new music on that, and that will lead to like an album of the month for me. And Spotify is really great. But that's something that I think I lean on all the time, is that like 3 hours of just like curated, eclectic music that goes like all the way across to like indie bands and to like 80s stuff, or like he'll connect two things. And it's just like, it's that little tiny,
very cool
connection that I really. And then it's, you know, it always sounds sunny. And I know a lot about the traffic in LA because they talk about it. It's just like a really weird thing to like know a lot about.
Oh, I love picturing you in the winter listening to that every
morning. Yeah, it actually helps.
Thinking about California. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. They just, yeah, it's always sunny in the earphones. Listen to a lot of podcasts too. That's helpful. Radio Lab's a good one for me.
Are there any other things that you've seen recently that you want to recommend? Friends shows or plays or whatever?
We were just talking about BAM. And I said earlier, off record, that I've seen more things at BAM than I've seen on Broadway. But what I didn't say is that there's never been one thing at BAM that I've like fallen in love with. But every time I see something there, it just is so provocative that it and it's so different, and yet this incredible like passion into the way that they plan a season and the diversity that they plan is incredible. And you can get really cheap tickets that even if you live in Queens, get the $20 ticket. Just like look at their beautiful website and like pick something. Like I love Pina Bausch, but I had never seen one. And I went last year not knowing what the piece was, just being like, oh, they're having Pina Bausch and I should go. And it's one of the best things I think I've ever seen was at BAM, and I had no idea. It's almost like, I feel like if I recommended Hamilton or I recommended like Spring Awakening or something, everybody's talking about, but there's something about like not knowing what you're gonna see and just kind of
being
like,
surprised.
Yeah. That like really can never be disappointing because you have no idea what it was.
Right. But it's at a venue that you trust.
That I trust in what
curating it.
And, yeah. And they're really accessible.
Yeah.
Because even their film series is really incredible sometimes too. Like they'll just. They will send you a lot of emails if you sign up, but you should sign up because they're always really well designed. So it's just
joys.
Yeah, exactly, and they just make beautiful options.
Yeah,
I think so. That's something I just feel like if you've never been to BAM in the city, you should go out to Brooklyn and just go.
That's pick a great and recommendation. Mm-hmm. And just a side note, I mean, Brittany and I were talking about this earlier, but I did end up going to see the show that Brendan spoke about on episode 4 at BAM, Tabac Rouge, and it was absolutely, absolutely amazing. It finished this weekend, but I got to see it, so thank you, Brendan.
Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to me. This is the sixth one?
Fifth? Yeah.
How do you feel on the sixth one?
Am
I turning the tables? I'm turning the tables.
I feel really good about it. I think I'm learning a lot about like the technical aspects about how to do this thing. Mm. And it just makes me really happy to have the people I've gotten to talk to, like to get to have them in my house for an hour and get to talk about this stuff. And like you said, with the photography, like getting to do something on my own that I then can put out in the world. And I don't know if someone's listening to it at whatever time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can check my little account on the web later and see how many times it's been downloaded or whatever. But it's something that people are experiencing outside of the time we're actually saying these words. So it is interesting like that.
You might be sleeping, but somebody might be listening. That's nice.
And it's been really nice hearing from people that they've connected with it or that they need to talk about this stuff too. So it's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to do more.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Brittany.
Thank you for listening.
listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.